Most of us remember exactly what we were doing on September 11th. But what about September 10th? NPR's Andy Bowers prepared this snapshot of the last day of what might be called the old normal.
On September 10th, 2001, President Bush flew to Florida to promote reading for children. His job approval rating was just over 50%, a little lower than his father's and Ronald Reagan's at the same point in their first terms, about the same as Bill Clinton's. In a Rhode Island hospital, software engineer Sean Andrews wasn't thinking about national politics. His pregnant wife was in labor, and there were complications.
They noticed that our daughter's heart rate was flat. And they were concerned that the baby may have been under stress from a prolonged labor.
Andrew's wife had an emergency C-section, and both baby and mother turned out to be fine. By the afternoon of September 10th, Sean Andrews was feeling both the elation and the responsibility of being a first-time dad.
You're choosing to bring another conscious being into a world that is full of joy and tragedy, and you certainly feel the moral weight of the decision to have a child.
But with news of the attacks the next morning, Sean Andrews realized his daughter would not be immune from the fears that had plagued him growing up in the 70s and 80s.
It seemed when the Cold War ended that the fear that terrible things could happen on such a huge scale had passed. But, you know, I was also more immediately concerned with, you know, how do I change her diaper? How do we give her a bath? And it's a fairly overwhelming experience.
On September 10th, news reports told of an FAA study about the nation's possible vulnerability to terrorism in the skies. But the threat was high-tech. The study warned that hostile groups could theoretically jam the satellite navigation system on which air traffic will soon depend. There was no mention of box cutters as a hazard. Also a year ago today, the wonder of aviation was being celebrated by a California periodontist named Carlene Mendieta.
We were in Hobbs, New Mexico. I was reenacting Amelia Earhart's first transcontinental record flight, which she made in 1928.
That was 9 years before Earhart was lost in a crash. Using the same type of plane and wearing period clothes, Mendieta was stopping in the same towns where Earhart had gone to spread the excitement of flying.
It was a rare chance to be able to bring that gone-by golden era of aviation to a lot of people, and especially I think it was poignant for children.
The next morning, Mendieta taxied out onto the runway to resume her tour, but the new, more sinister reality of American aviation literally stopped her in her tracks.
The tower called and said that the airways had all been closed.
It took 11 days to get airborne again, but Mendieta did finish the flight, as much out of defiance as anything else. In Washington, congressional Democrats had chosen September 10th to begin an assault on President Bush's plans for a missile defense shield. Delaware Senator Joseph Biden led the campaign.
Even the Joint Chief says that a strategic nuclear attack is less likely than a regional conflict, a major theater war, terrorist attacks at home or abroad, or any number of other real issues.
AFRTS News, Army Sergeant Mark Parr reporting from Washington.
The big story on U.S. Armed Forces Radio on September 10th was that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld had declared war. Speaking at the Pentagon, Rumsfeld warned the new enemy was as serious a threat as the old Soviet Union. Who was this foe?
It's the Pentagon bureaucracy. Not the men and women in uniform, but the uniformity of thought and action that we too often impose on them.
Of course, that was a very short-lived war. It lasted 24 hours.
Timothy Noah writes the Chatterbox column for the online magazine Slate. Here's the story he was following on September 10th.
I had a series of columns called The Rumsfeld Death Watch. Before September 11th, it had really become a foregone conclusion in Washington that Rumsfeld was on his way out.
But Noah says the same qualities that seemed to be alienating many in Washington on the 10th helped reverse Rumsfeld's fortunes after the 11th.
What was seen as a kind of belligerence and a sort of go-it-alone attitude suddenly seemed very attractive. He was very dismissive of stupid questions from the press, of which there were many. He became kind of a TV star.
And there's no more Rumsfeld Death Watch on Slate. On September 10th, New York Times reporter Barry Barrick was in Kabul, Afghanistan, covering the trial of 8 foreign missionaries accused by the Taliban of proselytizing. That story and the murder of Northern Alliance leader Ahmed Shah Massoud had both pushed distant Afghanistan into American headlines. And that, says Barrick, was unusual.
I think the interest was generally quite limited. There had already been a drought. It was then in its third year. Nearly a million people had been displaced.
But few in America knew anything at all about Afghanistan on September 10th. A year ago today, sales of American flags by the nation's biggest flag maker, Annan & Company, were down about 3% thanks to the recession. David White, head of the National Flag Foundation in Pittsburgh, was getting ready to go teach a flag education course at a Rotary Club. Before the 11th, White says Old Glory was a tough sell in some quarters.
To many people, the flag was a symbol that had been co-opted by groups that were more right-wing oriented. But after September 11th, that all changed because the flag became the uniting symbol.
A year ago today, a brand new book by Newsweek reporter David Kaplan was reopening the debate about the 2000 election debacle. The book said Supreme Court Justice David Souter believed if he'd had one more day, he could have persuaded his colleague Anthony Kennedy to switch his vote in the decisive Bush versus Gore case. That could well have affected the outcome of the election. But the biggest TV news stories on September 10th had been lingering for months. Gary Condit and the summer of the shark attack.
A regular kid visiting his dad in Virginia Beach, taking advantage of the ocean when suddenly his life was taken.
On September 10th, California novelist and mother Susan Strait was tired of all the shark stories and the fear they were causing among parents. Strait had recently written an LA Times article about what she called the bubble wrapping of American children. She wrote that kids are so constantly helmeted and overprotected these days, they aren't learning to take risks. But if anything, she says parents are even more frightened this summer thanks to the latest news obsession, stories of abducted children. And Strait thinks this new theme is linked to September 11th.
It's the fear that there are people walking around among us who look maybe like we do, but they are really strangers, and they want to harm us. That's exactly what the child abduction fears are about. You're looking at the people you know walking around the street thinking, does this person want to harm me, even though this is someone I think I know?
A year ago today, Andrew Canning was sitting on a plane in Chicago waiting to fly to New York as he did every Monday for the work week. But his plane was stuck on the tarmac.
And I was calling people saying, I'm going to make it in an hour, and then I'm going to make it in two. And of course, all I was doing is getting very angry about it.
After 3 hours, Canning's plane returned to the gate in Chicago, and he was told he could catch a later flight, but he'd had enough.
So I decided to go spend another night in Chicago. That whole incident probably saved my life the next day.
That's because by making one of those routine decisions we all make every day, Canning was not in his office on the 105th floor of 2 World Trade Center the next morning. The clients with whom he would have been meeting and 196 colleagues at Aon Risk Services all died.
Something or somebody was looking after me that day. I don't believe there's such a thing as coincidence anymore. And when I make a decision, I know that the decision I'm making is going to change my life in some way. And it might just be that I'll get there half an hour early, I might get there half an hour late. But I know it'll change a whole series of events for me.
As September 10th, 2001 came to a close, many Americans settled in for the year's first installment of a fall ritual.
Are you ready?
And as the Denver Broncos and the New York Giants began their battle on the football field, all seemed right and normal in America. Andy Bowers, NPR News.
Headlines from September 10th are on the website npr.org.